are listening to a free version of The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, December 9th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, writer for the Rolling Stone magazine, author of multiple best-selling books, Canadian-born Guy Lawson. On his profile of Justin Trudeau, Canada's new prime minister, in the New York Times. He'll also, I think, give us a Canadian perspective on just how effed up things are in this country. Also on the program today, Big Little Win in the Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga. You remember that battle to unionize? Well, about 10% of the workforce there has been unionized. It's big. It's little. Still a win. Also, a Supreme Court hears the latest attack on the electoral integrity of our democracy, questioning one person, one vote. Meanwhile, Donald Trump, up nationally, up in New Hampshire, up in Iowa. And we are very close to that time where the Republican establishment totally crapping themselves, but still unable to quit the guy who is now calling for. I mean, I don't know if he's calling out explicitly for fascism. Explicitly. Like, he's not saying, like, I'm pro, we should have fascism in this country. But I think there's still time. And the real question is, how would the Republicans respond? Right now, it's just like, I don't agree on policy reasons for. But it'll be interesting to see what happens to them next. Meanwhile, an undercover climate activist expose, Greenpeace, went out and got Psyostitutes to expose themselves on how they will engage in climate denial for cash. All this while Beijing has its first red alert for smog ever. And guns killed almost 2,700 kids in the United States in 2010. That's one child or tween or teen every 3 hours. Congratulations, you ammosexuals.
Freedom.
Freedom. Freedom. Freedom, ladies and gentlemen. Freedom. And Fox apparently has a really good suggestion for kids on how to deal with shooters. So, I mean, that is really the key. The key really for kids, elementary kids and teens. You really just got to know how to approach a shooter. And they've got some tips. We will play that later in the program. Of course, that'll be very helpful for parents. And that's you know, that's great. That's great. Because, you know, if these kids could just stop walking around, these elementary school kids, these teenagers, stop being soft targets, kids.
Sometimes when, you know, political discourse gets so divisive and divided that it's good to identify good ideas that come from the other side of the spectrum.
That's right.
And highlight them.
That's right. That's right.
And when I saw that segment, I thought, you know, let's be fair.
We're going to do this in the service of being fair and balanced. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind you that it is now early December. And as we do every year, we rely on you to tell us what we've done right this year. So we want you to write in. If you have a recommendation, a suggestion, a nomination, whatever you want to call it, for one of our best of interviews or five of our best of interviews this year or segments, because we'll cut up like some phone calls or stuff from the fun half and, you know, pull it from our clips. Email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Or I guess you could tweet at us at @MajorityFM or leave a message for us on Facebook. We will compile these and include them in our best of offerings for the end of the year. Maybe even like the first day or two of next year. I don't know. I haven't looked at the calendar. So get on that, folks. We need your help for this, particularly since we have two new people in the office who weren't here for the year, so they can't possibly have a sense of it. And Michael, of course, who doesn't really pay
attention. Doesn't listen, doesn't care.
So there's no way that he would know.
I have no suggestions.
I mean, I know what Michael's suggestions would be.
Mine.
Yes, of course.
They were great.
What
was that, Sam?
Folks, not only is it towards the end of the year, so we are looking for best ofs, it is also the gift-giving time of season of the year. Did I say that correctly?
Nailed it.
You know, I'll tell you something. I got some points at home, not just because I am shaving more often because I'm enjoying my Harry's.com razors, but because my wife apparently is Secret Santa at work. And, well, so she comes home. She's like, I think I screwed up. I gave my Secret Santa some type of cookie or brownie thing, and apparently the guy is violently allergic to peanuts, and there were peanuts in it, and he got incensed because he's like, I can't eat this. Like, he was complaining in front of my wife about the gift, and of course, my wife, instead of saying, like, boy, that person probably should have had a better sense of who you were, she got very defensive. Probably tipping off that she was the Secret Santa. So she's telling me this, and I'm like, dude, Harry's. Get the guy a Harry's razor. She's like, well, I know, I'm not going to go out and spend $35, $40 on Secret Santa. I'm like, no, it's $15. It's $15. And I told her, as a special offer for my listeners, and even though you never listen to the show, I'm going to tell you, Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase when you go to harrys.com and enter promo code Majority Report. And then, of course, my wife was like, Majority Report, what's that? I'm like, sweetheart, that's the name of the show I've been doing for 5 years. Harry's not only makes its own really high quality. She didn't care. She was just like, oh, you're saying $10? Yes. For the starter kit, $10. Harry's not only makes its really high-quality grooming products, they give 1% of their sales and 1% of their time back to the communities they serve. I told her, finding the perfect gift from Harry's couldn't be easier. Doesn't involve, you don't have to go out shopping. Harry's.com is totally streamlined, easy to use, takes less than 30 seconds to place an order. Go to harrys.com right now, and as a special offer from my fans, Harry's will give you $5 off your first order with the code MajorityReport. Don't wait. Economy shipping for the holidays ends on December 18th, so act now. That's harrys.com. Enter code MajorityReport. Harry's makes every morning feel like a holiday. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Guy Lawson. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is one of my favorite guests and one of my, you know, frankly, one of my favorite authors and one of my favorite reporters, ladies and gentlemen. He is the author of multiple bestsellers, The Brotherhoods, Octopus, his latest, Arms and the Dudes, about three Orthodox Jewish stoners who pulled off one of the biggest small arms deals in the history of this country. He is writing for a Rolling Stone, but now we're talking about a piece he wrote for the New York Times on the a profile, the first, if I am not mistaken, print interview with Justin Trudeau, the Canadian Guy Lawson. Welcome, Guy.
Hey, Sam, if I can just make a couple of points here. One is Arms and the Dudes makes an excellent Christmas gift for those of you thinking of that.
No, honestly, I'm not. That's absolutely true. The stories you find are always really, in some ways, just completely insane.
Well, the second thing I want to say is that I've spent really a good part of my career criticizing, often ridiculing, and sometimes correcting the New York Times. So it's an unusual thing for me to be writing for them, but there you are.
There was a little bit of back and forth on from the Arms and the Dudes, right? Because they had written a piece about these guys back in the day, and through your reporting, you found that their piece was
categorically wrong.
Oh, all right. I was going to say bunk, but I mean yours is a little bit more, I guess, on point. And so good for them. Well, I mean, they at least, good for them for not, you know, being, they may have been pissy about it, but at least they didn't hold a grudge.
Right. And there was some de-gonzoing of the piece, I will say, the Trudeau process. But I was down with it. You know, the substance stayed the same. It just, they've got a much broader audience. They're not to a demographic. And I think it was important to introduce the leader of Canada at a crucial moment, not just in Canadian history, but in global history. You know, the election in Canada has a lot of the resonance with the American election and the rhetoric surrounding the Muslim population of the world and what Canadians chose to do. So we can talk about that if you'd like.
Yeah, I want to do that. And I want to say that, you know, after the recent Canadian elections, I got multiple emails from people saying you should have Guy Lawson on to explain because you don't know anything about Canadian politics.
That was from my wife and kids, right?
Yes, they all wrote me, but your kids are really, they are incredibly foul-mouthed when they write into a show, but they are also great with grammar. And what I didn't know was that do I have this right? Your dad was a spokesperson for the NDP?
I am so Canadian, and it feels like Canada just doesn't have any kind of recognition of that for me. Like, I'm not expecting, you know, the Canadian press to bow down to me or anything, but I am so Canadian. My father was very involved in politics. He was actually Australian, but he moved to Canada when I was born. And he got involved he was a journalist, and then he got involved in politics, the NDP. And he was the press attaché, or spokesperson, I guess you'd say, for a guy named Tommy Douglas, who was the leader of the NDP in the 1968 federal election that was won by Pierre Trudeau. That was the year that Trudeau mania swept the country. And my old man was, you know, Tommy Douglas, the two most beloved figures in Canadian history are really Pierre Elliott Trudeau and Tommy Douglas. And my father was very close to Tommy Douglas, and it was a horrific experience campaigning against Pierre Trudeau because he was, number one, he was an expert thief. He would steal policies and ideas and turn them into his own, and that was just infuriating to my father. And, you know, number two, he was, you know, the establishment, and my father was very much anti-establishment and trying to, you know, create a much broader social progressive agenda than the liberals ever would. So, you know, my dad told me stories when I was a kid about this campaign and how miserable it was. Days and weeks would pass, and he and Douglas would not even exchange a word. I mean, you know, it was just absolutely devastatingly bad. And then, you know, the son, Pierre Trudeau's son, Justin, you know, is no match for his father in terms of accomplishments or intellectual kind of abilities or anything like that, but he's a hell of a politician. So in that sense, I was really drawn to the story from a personal connection.
Well, all right, let's talk about that, and then let's broaden out the conversation, because I have to say, I mean, he came across in your piece as an eminently likable guy. As
very Canadian, right?
Yeah. And also, I mean, I didn't really have a sense of just, I mean, he's pretty green. In one way, he's incredibly green. And it seems, you know, from your piece that he basically became the reason why he is prime minister today is because he won a charity boxing match on some level. But of course, he also had some amazing experiences as a kid. Give us a sense of like this, because my understanding is that what happened is he and the Liberals ran on an anti-austerity platform. The New Democrats sort of ran, in some respects, tried to run slightly to the right of where they are normally, and that ended up hurting them. But
yeah.
That there was like a coalescing against trying to end the Harper, I guess, regime, experiment, project, whatever they thought they were doing. So just,
right.
You know, characterize this for us and give us a sense of what of who Justin Trudeau is.
Yeah, I mean, I think one way to think about it, as you're talking, as reminds me of another Canadian, Joni Mitchell, who had the lyric, "Don't it always seem to go, you don't know what it's got, what you've got till it's gone."
Mm.
And what was happening in Canada was that the sense of being Canadian was evaporating, and the idea that Canada would have its unique perspective on not just domestic but also world events was being swept away by this conservative point of view, which was much more reflexively pro-American, pro-war, disrespectful of minorities. We wouldn't even call them minorities in the Canadian context really anymore, but of otherness. And was seeing sort of the Muslim community writ large, but most specifically refugee and immigrant communities, as a threat rather than as a humanitarian crisis, especially in Syria. It became, the election in Canada took on this really deep, profound meanings. And so what you had in the last few elections was around 2/3 of Canadians would vote for a liberal-minded party, either the Liberals or the NDP. And the Conservatives would win, first a minority, then a majority, with about 1/3 of the country. So you had more or less a 2/3 progressive vote divided. And in this campaign, when the stakes were kept getting higher and higher, and the rhetoric more and more hysterical and fear-mongering from the Conservative Party, you had the NDP, poor old NDP, my dad would just roll his eyes in misery at this, but the NDP, foolishly, in hindsight, trying to show that it could wear big boy pants and be fiscally responsible and therefore, you know, be trusted with government, coming in with essentially an austerity budget along conservative lines. And you had Trudeau, who was very aware of this opportunity, tacking to the left and saying, you know, no, we don't need to be austere. We can spend on social programs and infrastructure. And so you can have your cake and eat it too. And in the sort of sense of, I called it Harperphobia, in the piece, didn't make the edit, but I think that's an apt term for it. People voted strategically, and so they wanted to, and it happened in a matter of weeks, and it happened in a huge sort of, for Canada at least, landslide way. So what you had in Justin Trudeau, to return to the premise of who he is, you have, you know, he's something like John Kennedy. You know, he was the first boy. He was born when his father was in power in 1971. You know, by his own account, pretty much, he didn't really do a whole hell of a lot with his life up until entering politics in 2008. You know, he did some charitable work. He comes from money. He traveled. He was a bouncer. He was a snowboard guy, a stoner. But, you know, he got a couple degrees from university, and he had an appetite for politics, and he had an amazing name, obviously. It's like the Kennedy name in the Canadian context. And it turned out that he was not much like his father politically speaking. I mean, policy-wise, you'd say we can come to that. But, yeah, more or less, he's a liberal, open-minded kind of a dude. But in terms of his political skills, his father was very much an intellectual and very much a strategic kind of thinker and interested in policy. Trudeau, the younger, is a press-the-flesh kind of a guy, almost like a celebrity. And this was what Harper tried to run against him with this idea that there was no substance to him and that he was just Justin, the haircut. Or in that boxing match that you referred to, they referred to him as a shiny pony. What Trudeau did was the Liberal Party, under the preening, and I mean preening, ridiculously bad leadership of another so-called intellectual named Michael Ignatieff, who people might have heard of. He was sort of a torture-justifying Harvard professor and sort of carpetbagger who moved back to Canada and promised that he would, you know, lead, you know, stay in Canada for the rest of his life. Of course, he left after getting trounced. So in 2011, they went from the minority party to a rump of 34 seats, and Trudeau was one of those members. And in order to sort of turn things around for the Liberals, he staged a publicity stunt, like a Putin-esque kind of a thing, and he challenged the toughest conservative to a boxing match. And everybody thought,
for charity, for charity.
Yeah. For charity, yeah, for grazing cancer. It was just like money for cancer research. It was, you know, it looked like a couple of middle-aged white dudes with some sort of male aggression issues to work out getting into a ring. But Trudeau understood that it had much bigger symbolic significance if he could physically beat the hell out of a conservative. And that's what he did, to everyone's amazement. He beat up this black belt in karate military guy.
The guy's name was Brass Knuckles or something,
Brass,
right?
Knuckles Brazo. And, you know, talk about the vanquishment. Brass Knuckles Brazo is now, has lost his seat in the Senate due to a scandal and is working at a strip club in Ottawa. And there's Justin Trudeau, you know, in the House of Parliament as a prime minister, you know, reversal of fortune, so to speak.
But, you know, there's a quality of Canadian politics that sounds like we could be talking about, you know, oh, this is a town in upstate New York you're talking about.
But you got Trudeau's mother, Maggie Trudeau,
right,
who, you know, was partying with the Rolling Stones and having affairs with Teddy Kennedy and Ryan O'Neill in the 70s. I mean, she was a tabloid sensation. Like, she was a, sort of the pre-Diana Diana, you know, like a kind of semi-royal figure. So it has elements of kind of small town to it, and Ottawa is definitely, it refers to itself as the world's largest small town. It definitely has that vibe to it. But, you know, Canada, you know, you, Sam, let's go talk about your how you are proud of your ignorance about Canada, and how many subjects
I'm not proud about it. I mean, I do have a flag that announces that we wave out in front of
another conversation, you likened Canadian politics. Now you said it to upstate town. You said Oregon, you know, the state of Oregon. It's just a little more important than that. It does the same amount of trade with the United States as China, for example. You might remember that the World War II was fought alongside Canada. You might remember that Canada provided the moral conscience during the Vietnam War to enable hundreds of thousands of people to dodge the draft. And, you know, you might remember that Canada as well refused to participate in the Iraq War, almost, you know, uniquely. There's a place that Canada has had in the world since the 1960s in Trudeau, the reign of Pierre Trudeau and a guy named Lester Pearson, that was at stake in this election, and Harper wanted nothing more than to destroy that idea of Canada, what he would call a myth of Canada. Canada as a unique moral actor on the world stage and not just the stooge of whichever regime is in power in the United States.
You know, I have to say, I got that sense that I was not sort of really conscious of that notion of how Canadians identified themselves and how much the Harper Project was determined to change the way that Canadians thought about themselves.
That's what was at stake. That's absolutely it. It was the Rob Fordification of Canada. And you see it, if you really want to dig down into it, if anybody listening in Toronto will understand what I'm referring to, that you can call it the 905 effect. Toronto, downtown Toronto, has been traditionally a really important part of the liberal worldview, and I don't mean just in Canada, I mean in the world. And lots of things were begun there, multiculturalism, the idea of race-blind immigration policy, and how Toronto is this incredible polyglot now. But surrounding it are these white suburbs, and the 905 is the area code on the phone. And, you know, they inflicted a mayor like Rob Ford on that city.
Remind people who Rob Ford is, because I think the
crack-smoking, fat buffoon who was, you know, ridicule
Be more
of
blunt.
The world fell on Toronto and Canada as that moron, you know, went off on his crack binges.
But he also, but in addition to being, you know, it wasn't just about him going on crack binges and being like this party, this like frat boy. He had the politics to go along with it. I mean, this guy was basically
proud. It was proudly.
This guy could have walked on and off of Fox and Friends without really having to do anything other than perhaps tuck in his shirt. Right.
Right. And so what you see in that is the vanishing of something that I think that most Canadians, and I say most because obviously a significant number don't agree, because, you know, Stephen Harper wasn't elected by three people. He was getting 35-40% of the vote, but the majority of Canadians don't agree with. And so you had a political culture that was the majority was divided against itself. And Trudeau benefited, I think, with a final sort of realization that if this was perpetuated much longer, that something really deeply precious would be gone.
I mean, is that what has motivated him? Because, you know, like I've heard, you know, in the brief references that we have made to this election, we had multiple callers who called in to both criticize my sort of assessment.
I got some notes about that too.
But also, to be fair, to me, criticize the assessment of the people who had just criticized my assessment. And so each Canadian called in saying that the last Canadian didn't know what they were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
they
totally,
all agreed that I didn't know what I was talking about. But tell me, you know, the two things.
Let's stipulate that part that you don't.
I'm perfectly willing to stipulate. That's why I brought you on, because I wanted to bring in an expert. But the two things stick out for me. One is that people were talking about, you know, something like, you know, Trudeau, when it comes to sort of more like neoliberal economic notions and things like supposedly free trade, like we're seeing with the TPP, he's all on board for that. The sense I got from your piece is that to the extent that there was a driving, I guess, reason for his candidacy, in his mind, it was to protect the legacy that his father had built of Canada being like multicultural and providing that sort of conscience for the world, if only because they're standing right next to America saying, like, hey, guy, there's another way to do this.
Yeah, you don't have to invade Iraq. You don't have to bomb Syria and ISIL. Like, that's not the only solution. Syrian
refugees, or you can have universal health care.
Well, yeah, I mean, and there's that has a lot of texture to it as well. But, like, just to stick with the idea of how the West relates to Islam and the Muslim world, you know, it's the front page of every newspaper in this country, this Donald Trump,
right,
you know, crypto-fascistically demonizing an entire religion. You know, it is not a small difference to have the leader of your country in Justin Trudeau be saying not just the opposite, but the opposite and plus some, saying not only do we disagree with you, we're going to bring 25,000 refugees immediately to our country. And we're going to continue to do that because we are a nation of immigrants, because we are a nation of multiplicities, because a Muslim Canadian is just the same as what Harper referred to as an old stock Canadian. You know, this era, this age that we live in, this age of terror, if you want to call it that, the stakes couldn't be higher on these matters. You know, my little girls are in sixth grade in their little local school, and there's some Muslim kids in their school, and they're assigned to write an essay about Islam by their teachers, and this is a predominantly white little town we're in. And they get this study material that is just ridiculously reductive and insane about Muslims. It's like all Muslim women wear hijabs. All Muslim men, you know, make Muslim women behave this way and that. And it's just, you know, it's like 1940s Mississippi with black people. And this is what's abroad in the land. And so, yeah, you know, there are things, my Canadian friends and colleagues, you know, emailed me as I was reporting this story to you know, demand that I get a more sophisticated answer on global warming and carbon capture or alleviation of childhood poverty. You know, these are things that there's lots of people engaged with, and I respect and admire it, but don't lose track of, like, the big picture here, that Stephen Harper, his vision of Canada did not include anything like the kind of understanding and respect for difference that Justin Trudeau represents.
And I guess, I mean, theoretically, right? I mean, I say this theoretically, that when you are that is that fundamental difference is the basis for any type of progressive and forward thinking policies, right? I mean, if like you don't have that central sense of empathy where you appreciate the humanity of other people. There was, I think you wrote in the
piece. It's really big, Sam. I mean, you know, I feel like, you know, what an interesting point, just to digress for a second to say this, because, you know, Obama gets a lot of heat, and rightly so, and sometimes from you, and sometimes from, you know, people on the left. But, you know, just remember, like, some fundamental concepts here about difference and about, you know, little schoolgirls and how their friends are told about their religion and how, you know, society organizes itself. That's big, big stuff, I think.
You know, it's fascinating. I went out to have a drink the other night with a friend of mine, Eugene Merman, who is a comedian, who I don't know if most people know this, but he came to this country as an immigrant from Russia.
I came as an immigrant from Canada.
Well, yes, I know that's true. Not the same circumstances, because at that time, you know, he was saying, like, you know, when I came over here as a kid, I used to get called a commie fag in school all the time because, this, of course, during the Jews,
how about the Irish threat of the 1860s?
Right.
The Fenians.
And he's like, you know, when I hear this stuff about the Syrian refugees, like, I was coming from America's enemy. I was a refugee here, essentially. And came under circumstances that were not as dire as the Syrians. And he's like, I know how hard that was for me. Never mind, like, what we're seeing here with,
totally.
You know, it is stunning. And I can only imagine, I mean, like that's why the implications of, I mean, we're a little bit off topic here, a little bit, but the implications of the rest of the Republican Party not denouncing Trump and is so, carries so much weight. It carries
See,
so much
father,
weight.
My father, you know, it's like this. It's like, you know, there's a binary, there's like an either or. George Bush, you're with us or you're against us, right? And Jean Chrétien said in 2004, how about not? How about we can be a third way? And this is what I want to talk to you about, the geopolitical component of this. You know, during the Vietnam War, Nixon, you know, who called Trudeau an asshole, and Trudeau replied, I've been called worse things by nicer people, which I thought was a great comeback. But, you know, the Canadian government refused to join into this binary. You're either Soviet Union, you're either in the communist world, or you're with America. And Canada said, how about not? How about a third way? How about we have relations with Cuba? How about we trade with China? How about we, you know, play hockey against the Russians? And these things sort of pass by, and everyone thinks Canadians are polite, but it's a very significant difference. And so what Justin Trudeau's saying is yes, there's a problem with Islamic extremism, and yes, Canada has a role to play in that. But no, there's not just two ways to think about it. You know, you either are a jihadi, or you're a kamikaze maniac trying to kill, you know, your Ted Cruz. It's just that it's just a false dilemma. And so I feel like what's happening under Trudeau is a third way is going to emerge. And we'll see what the world does with that in the light of Paris and you know, these attacks, these horrible attacks. But, you know, the emergence of a different perspective, you know, doesn't necessarily announce itself with trumpets, but I think that's what you're beginning to see in Canada.
I wonder if this the impact of Canadian politics I wonder if Canadian politics will have more of an impact on the politics in this country than it has in the past, which I don't think is insignificant, the amount, you know, I mean, because much of our conversation, I don't know how much, there's no way to quantify it, but certainly in the sort of broader popular conversation about single payer healthcare, a lot of that is a function of being able to reference Canada. as having it. I mean, that's just, you know.
Donald Trump's in favor of that. You know.
Well, yes, but I'm saying, I wonder if, you know, in the 10 years or so that Harper has been the prime minister there, and certainly, you know, in the years, you know, from like 01 to 06, there was nothing that was going to get through the American psyche beyond what had happened on 9/11. But I wonder just like, you know, if the internet and the breaking down of media sources, and just wonder if this stuff is going to filter. It's hard to measure how much it has been impacting American politics to have essentially a Governor LePage. I would make the analogy of Harper in Canada. How much that's going to impact this country?
A couple of big frame things, I think. Number one is that Obama has never really had a true sort of bromance in geopolitical terms. Mm. He's had some allies. He's had alignments. But I think with Trudeau, he finds someone whose voice is in three dimensions like his. And I don't say that because I'm making it up. I'm saying it because Obama's White House spokesperson, Ben Rhodes, told me that, you know, in an exclusive interview, and because Canada's having its first state dinner in Washington in 20 years under Trudeau, and that Obama has expressed a personal interest in getting to know him and mentor him. You know, that is not insignificant when a president of the United States reaches out like that. That hasn't happened in a very long time. But secondarily, you know, I'm told, and I don't know how real this will turn out to be because, you know, you despair, but I'm told that Hillary Clinton and her people have been watching the way that Trudeau ran and taking lessons from how to run a progressive campaign, a successful one, by standing up to divisive rhetoric and staring down the kind of, Islamophobia that you get merchandised instead of, you know, trying to piecemeal it or mealy-mouth stuff. Trudeau was very direct and confrontational with Harper, and he called him on it, and it worked.
You wrote about the issue of dual citizens, Canadian, and just tell us about that, because I thought that was a fascinating. I mean, it's such a sophisticated response in terms of degrading the citizenship that I wonder if, like, you know, the American population, frankly, with all due respect to Americans, could really sort of, if that could resonate here. But explain that to us, because I found that fascinating.
So Harper introduced a law called Bill C-24, and it was, you know, basically the Patriot Act, Canadian style, with a bunch of permutations that were different. And one of them was this fashionable idea in certain reactionary quarters that people born in other countries, what they really mean is Muslims, who behave in ways that are unacceptable, by which they mean convicted of terrorism, which can mean a million things. It doesn't mean that you got a suicide vest on. It can mean that you are, for example, Palestinian and you give money to a group that's supporting people in Gaza, just say.
Right.
You know, the way that this aiding and abetting or providing material support to terrorism can be defined so broadly that those people, those brown people with their funny God, aren't really citizens because they weren't born here like us. And so you can be citizens.
You're talking about naturalized Canadian citizens.
Yes, you're talking about people who are citizens of a country, but were not born there. Harper decided that their citizenship should be different from every other Canadian citizenship, the Canadians that are born in Canada. And so he created a law that enabled the Minister for Immigration to revoke their citizenship with no judicial review and no possible judicial review. So, you know, my friend, Srinivas Krishna, is a remarkable, wonderful filmmaker and technology developer and human being. He's just one of my favorite people in life. And he calls me up when this law passes, and he says, so now, and he's lived his whole life in Canada since he's 2 years old. He was born in India. And he's like, so I'm no longer, if they decide to take it away, I'm no longer Canadian? It was just shocking. And so what happened in the debates was Stephen Harper said in this debate, well, of course, why wouldn't we remove citizenship from terrorists? Now, there's so many assumptions that's so pregnant with so many different meanings, that statement. But Trudeau looked straight in the eye and said to him, a Canadian is a Canadian is a Canadian. Now, you've got a pretty degraded discourse when you need to assert that kind of thing. in a national debate. But that's where things were heading, and I think that Canadians, the majority, it turned out, agreed with Trudeau and the NDP, it should be said, because, you know, they got 20-some percent of the vote too. So you had like more or less 65% again voting progressively, broadly speaking.
The idea, and, though, that Harper made, I mean, excuse me, that Trudeau made that argument that when you make a Canadian citizenship for some people sort of contingent or conditioned, or that you're actually degrading what it means to be Canadian, broadly speaking. I mean, just that concept that even though this may not impact, is not possible to impact everyone on its face, it does impact the entire society. It degrades all of us to do this. But that argument is one that seems to be, very largely speaking, broadly speaking, absent from politics, even in this country too. I mean,
maybe Hillary Clinton's people will read the article and consider this way of discussing and confronting bigotry.
I would hope that there is some type of foundation in this country to do that. I mean, the idea of that you can have. I mean, it's a commons argument, right? It's an argument that even though something doesn't necessarily directly impact everybody, there are shared values that if you impact those values, you're devaluing them for everybody.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid in high school, we used to have these debates about the death penalty. And the idea that an innocent person would be, or someone who wasn't necessarily guilty beyond reasonable doubt would be executed used to matter, right? In this country, that's long gone. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. It is coming back into fashion a little bit. But for a long time, it just was completely out of the question. If you were convicted and sentenced to death, whether you were mentally retarded or not or whatever, DNA evidence aside, you deserve to die. And so, these are not abstractions. Valuing life, valuing difference. The argument Trudeau makes in the piece, and you're going to see, I think, emerge through Canadian politics over the years to come, is that there is no such thing as a Canadian ethnicity or religion or race, that all of Canadians put together, the multiplicity is what equals Canada. And what, to me, it's a little Pollyanna-ish in the world of division and strife, of course, and that needs to be said, and it's not like, there are no problems confronting the world or that Islamic extremism isn't real. But just the fact that that provides the moral basis for your political worldview, I think that is really important.
But you guys will still have that whole legitimacy test with beer and hockey. Is that the way?
No. The one thing I can predict with absolute certainty is the Toronto Maple Leafs will continue to suck.
Now,
my whole life.
All right, Guy, now I got to say, this talk, I know the impact it's having on our audience.
Facebooking. We're going to.
Well, here's what I want to suggest, because I know that that you always like to get likes for your Facebook because you've just.
This is the only place I get them.
Well, this is what I want to suggest. I think this makes a lot of sense. I've thought about this. We're going to do is we're going to do a little contest. If Guy gets 5,000 or more likes on Facebook from this interview, hold on here.
I'll eat my hat.
No. One of those people will be picked out randomly. You will adopt them so that they can get Canadian citizenship.
There you go. So, I have dual nationality with Australia.
So if you adopt somebody, they'll be able to get they'll be able to basically travel anywhere in the English-speaking world with a passport if you adopt them. Now, we can work out the details.
I'm a trailer park kid. That's right.
We can work out the details, but we have to, we have to put a time limit too on these 5,000 likes because we don't want to, we don't want this thing to drag out and then 10, 15 years from now, you've got to adopt somebody. But there's a good chance.
I think it's more like the times should be on because it would have to be the cedar effect, the cedar bump.
The cedar bump. Well, because, what I may also do is try and see if I can't get you to adopt Myla because she could get that, and then maybe we could just dish off the whole college expense on you guys as well. We can work out the details on this. But
well, I will say, though, that I do try to keep my little Facebook thing somewhat lively, and it is a good way to communicate. And, you know, for us older guys, Sam, we got to try to do social media, and it's a mystery to me. It baffles me, but I get its importance. I just don't quite understand how to do it. So, yeah, $5,000, and you can come live with me in upstate New York, my wife and two kids, and we'll all go to Canada together.
It's Guy Lawson 2, numeral 2, and on Facebook. We'll put a link to it. Just give us an update.
No, that's Twitter. That Twitter's Guy Lawson 2. I think right. Facebook's just Guy Lawson author.
Yeah, all right. Facebook, we'll link to both at majority.fm. But wait, give us an update before you go on what's happening with both Arms and the Dudes in terms of the movie.
Yeah.
And also, Octopus, is that going to be like a movie too on HBO?
Here's the skinny. So okay. Arms and the Dudes has been made. It's shot. It's in the can. It comes out August 19th.
All right. Folks are going to want to read that book before the movie comes out.
You're going to really want to get Christmas presents with
that. Oh, definitely.
But August 19th, it stars Jonah Hill and Miles Teller, and there's a special cameo appearance from a massive movie star. In the movie as well. Octopus.
It's not me.
Octopus.
I just want to make that
sorry?
Clear. It's not me. I don't want there to be
no,
any.
No, it's Marin. It's Marin.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
The Octopus is with HBO, and it's being written by a guy named Peter Gould, who's a terrific writer. He was a lead writer for Breaking Bad, and he's the producer of Better Call Saul. And he's got a really interesting take on it. And then I have another thing. A Rolling Stone article called "The Dukes of Oxy" about oxycodone. We can come on and talk about that, Sam.
Can we do that one?
I
don't think we have had you on about that. Yes or no?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Okay. I think you did. Yeah. So anyway, that's with a guy named Mike DeLuca, and that's also being turned into a movie. They've got the writer working on that. So yeah, there's some stuff like that. But I got to say, you know, it's fun to be doing pure journalism. You know, like back in the saddle kind of stuff instead of narrative. You know, I love doing narrative stuff too, but. Storytelling, but it's, you know, Trudeau definitely caught my attention and got me out of my seat and up to Ottawa to encounter somebody. If you look on, you know, read it online, feel free to comment, of course, and let me know your thoughts, but I think you're going to find it's an interesting encounter.
I found it really interesting, and it was funny to sort of see the guy's reaction to speaking to Obama. I mean, he seemed like he was genuinely sort of like on his heels by the whole thing.
I'm still looking forward to the day when you run for governor,
and
some sort of Cedar Mania sweeps New York State. And I can interview you, and you can be astounded at meeting world leaders yourself.
Well, there's still time, Guy. Hope springs eternal. I appreciate
That's
it.
Right.
Guy Lawson, folks, GuyLawson.com. We'll put all the links to your books at majority.fm and, of course, the piece in the New York Times. Guy, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Sam. Great stuff.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
All right, folks, we're going to head into our fun half. Although that was... certainly fun. This is more fun than really. It's just so much fun, this show. It's unbelievable. In the fun half, what do we have? Oh, we have, here it is. We have, Fox and Friends teaching kids to disarm shooters. Isn't that sweet? And, of course, now we have, you know, the... I'm not going to get too deep into it, but, you know, it is amazing how in times like these, the rhetoric of supposed progressives is identical to that of, you know, folks like Ted Cruz or Donald Trump or whoever. And we're seeing a rise now of like a death threats. One of our members of Congress who is a Muslim gets a death threat. You know, this is why when, you know, sometimes I say the best time to get a lawyer is when you don't need one. Also, the best time for us to fight back against things like Islamophobia and the BS that's spouted about there being something intrinsically wrong with Islam. And therefore... It naturally follows the people who are practitioners of Islam, who we call Muslims. That is why when we're not in situations like this, why it's so important to push back against it and not accept the BS. I mean, look, I think there's problems with all religions, frankly. And there's problems with extremism of every ilk, frankly. And they all have their own unique problems. But I think you're really hard-pressed to say that one is specifically more problematic than the other, except for given circumstances and contexts and perhaps maybe specific times, but not really. I mean, at the end of the day, every religion, every ideology has been used by those who want to maintain power, and has been exploited by those who want to maintain power, and has provided a rationale for people who feel disenfranchised, marginalized, or just plain crazy or bad. And they want to get other people to support them, and so they use that. But the idea that there's intrinsically, inherently one religion that is inherently more problematic, and therefore we have to something nebulous, let's just leave it hanging out there, is stupid and dangerous. All right, but we'll talk about that more in the fun half.
Out of context.
I don't
out
know
of
what...
context. That's all I could say.
Oh, are you you know, it's also there you go. You're not even supposed to take those words in vain now. You can't even say out of context.
Straw man?
Yeah, you're not even allowed to say
straw man is also off the table as well.
All of them. All words, unless you are part of the
inner sanctum.
Yes, the atheistic priesthood of the one who cannot be named. Like the one whose name cannot be uttered.
Your training begins now. This is how you leave a whiny YouTube comment.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. 646-257-3920 is the number. Folks, it is your support that makes this show possible. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Still haven't made that coupon. We're going to try and make it soon. Well, we will do so. If not, you just make one up yourself. Come on, just take the graphic from our page and, you know, our website and make it up yourself. I mean, come on. Don't be so lazy. What do I have to do? Walk you to everything? Walk you right up? God. And don't forget, best ofs, send us some ideas. Stop putting it all on us, people, is what I'm saying. Please. All right, 646-257-3920. We'll be right back after this.